The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. Lydia, talk Starman. I know. I'm having fun. This, so we're going to be talking about issue number 3 today with a cover date of November 94. Mm-hmm. And once again, it's by our writer James Robinson, the artist, or I guess he's just the penciler here, Tony Harris, and the inker Wade Von Grobiger. Yes, and this is so good, you know. Letterers also by John Workman, colorist Gregory Wright, assistant editor Chuck Kim, and editor, the late, great Archie Goodwin.
He's late, huh?
Yeah. So, I guess before we, you know, I'm just going to get out there in the front. I think this is one of the issues that I think really, I mean, I've enjoyed all the ones to the past, but this is the one that I think really starts pulling all the strings together, and just comes so strong in this comic.
Yes, totally agree.
Nice. But you know, before we get into the synopsis and get into the actual discussion of the comic, do we want to set some context for the world of 94?
Of course. Okay, so for the world was World of 94. November 1994.
Welcome
was
to the past!
I wanted to do some crazy weird BGM, but I forgot the tune to the Twilight Zone. How does it go?
I don't know. I tried to do it, and then X-Files popped in my head.
Yeah, no, it was going like... It sounds something like that, right?
That was amazing. I think that should be our new theme song.
Oh no. Okay. Okay, November 1994. There are a few things that struck me, and very crazy things. There was this disco in China that killed. Well, the disco didn't kill them. There was a fire in the disco. It sounds like a song, Fire in the Disco. But it killed 233 people. 233. Mm. That's a lot of people to be killed in a disco fire. It's just sad. Okay.
So she giggled.
That was one thing. But you know what? You know, it feels almost parallel with the type of catastrophe that goes on in superhero comics or you know, films or TV shows, that, like the Avengers and the devastation of New York and stuff like that. You know,
yeah. I mean, a fire in a disco, it could be anything from, like, that sounds like it would be the beginning of a plot of any of the superhero shows currently on.
Yeah, I never thought of that, but yeah, I mean, it's so dramatic. Fire in a disco. It's, how do you even put those two together? But you see, it's real life. Real life things happen like that. In real life, like, things like that happen. So, November 27th, 1994. Okay. And another thing that caught my eye was, I don't really want to talk about the beauty pageant thing because it's not that interesting. But I'll talk about Norway and Sweden. Norway and Sweden's different reactions to joining the EU. So basically, Sweden agreed to join the European Union on the 13th of November, but Norway, it voted against joining the EU 15 days later. So, yeah, I mean, why? That to me, things like that are very interesting because I like to write fiction, mm-hmm. and I like to write like big sprawling worlds with governments and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And these things spark my interest, like the motivations of the people, and you know, a country as a character, as a mm-hmm. you know, as a living thing. And them having a collective idea about things. Of course, you know, majority probably represents that idea, but...
Well, it just kind of reminds me and kind of makes me feel bad about how little I know mm-hmm. about Europe. Because, you know, I mean, I've studied a little bit of the that Asian place called Asia, and so I know a little bit about that. But when it comes to Europe, I'm mostly like, I'm pretty sure they make, like, there's Scandinavia, the Nether, mm-hmm. the Netherlands. I know we don't call them the Nether regions. That's something completely different. But, like, you know, I did not even know if either or both or neither of the mm-hmm. countries were in the EU. I just kind of assumed, like, oh, yeah, Norway and Sweden, they're basically the same, right? Yeah, and now I feel bad about it because I don't know.
Yeah, me too. I mean, even before we recorded this, I was like, isn't all of Europe in the EU?
and my insightful response was, I don't know. I'm thinking some aren't, like one or two. And what you said, it was like 22 countries 22. Aren't?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
The biggest one, Russia, too.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, it's Russia. It's
Russia.
Yeah, I mean, is it really Europe or is it Russia? It's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, in a way, I kind of feel like, and if you're from the United States, this may make sense to you. Mm. I kind of feel like Russia is to Europe as to Texas is to the South. Like, I mean, well, technically, sure, it is there, but it's, you know, it's kind of its own thing. It is. It's just kind of my thoughts, but then again, like I've said, don't know much about Europe.
I see. Well, since you live in Asia and you said you know something about Asia, without looking at the website.
Oh, goodness.
Do you know which... which
China city? Is yes.
No, what?
It's to the west of where I am now. You can't miss it.
To the west of where you are? What?
Well, yeah, I'm in Japan.
Oh, I see west. China. No, I'm going to ask you. There was a city in Asia that celebrated the 600th anniversary of its founding. What do you think it is? It's pretty prominent.
The city?
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal, actually.
Wow.
It's a country very near us.
I'm just gonna fail at the Asia Trivial Pursuit. That's you know, off the top of my head, mm-hmm. I kind of want to say it'd be a country in the Philippines, but that's just off the top of my head.
Oh, no, it's a lot closer than that. It's a lot closer to Japan than that.
Okay, give it away, because I failed.
Korea, Seoul, Korea, celebrated the 600th anniversary of its founding. Yeah.
Like recently or in November 94?
In November 94.
That's excellent.
Yeah, I mean, Korea, they've had their share of pain.
Yeah.
So, for Seoul to... be 600 years old in November 94. Lots of great things happened when Starman came out. Mm-hmm. Starman issue 3.
Yeah.
So, shall we go into the comic?
Sure, let's do that. So, the issue 3, it was called Night Flight. In the comic itself, the L of flight had parentheses around it, so it's kind of like night flight. And it actually looks really great on the page.
Yeah. Oh, we have two people here, you and I, so we can say night. One of us can say night flight, and one of us can say night fight, and okay, we make up the title.
Which one do you want?
I'll go with flight because my name starts with L.
Democratic. Love it.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
3, 2, 1.
Night flight.
Perfect. There you go. That is the audio version of this title.
Okay.
Okay.
Couldn't help but laugh. Sorry. Okay.
The synopsis. The issue starts with Jack and the O'Dares talking about their respective duties of protecting Opal City, with the O'Dares embracing and Jack still denying that he is a hero. He begins to remember times past with his brother, and perhaps that it was Jack who wanted to be the hero. Elsewhere, Kyle and Nash say their goodbyes as Kyle flies away to kill Jack. Jack continues to remember his family, both his father's mixture of sage and stupid, and his brother's mixture of cruel and kind, all while fighting Kyle in the night sky. I'm leaving it in. One take, Thomas. That's me. The Shade reveals himself to the O'Dares as being on the side of Opal City and Ted Knight against the Mist. The police department and the Shade's attack on the Mist and the rescue of Ted coincide with Jack's victory over and slaying of Kyle. This causes Nash to swear vengeance on Jack while saying that the girl who had shown him mercy is no more. In the end, Ted and Jack come to an agreement that Jack will take up the mantle of Starman if Ted will use his science for the betterment of the world. Following this, we get two epilogues of former Starmen.
I think.
One, a circus-bound, blue-skinned, cosmic geek, and the other, imprisoned on an alien world, is Will Payton. Dun dun dun!
Dun! Lydia's confused! Yeah, that was nice synopsis.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
So, what, I mean, first off, this cover. Tony Harris is so good. I mean, even in, you know, I mean, he's great now, and even looking here back in 94, just the skill of this cover, how you got the kind of Art Deco looking backgrounds, and the kind of astrological symbols and the star, and it's just such a great power on it.
Yeah.
Kyle using Jedi Force Lightning or Sith Force Lightning.
Yeah. I wonder what inspired the patterns at the back of the of Kyle.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like a throne.
It kind of does.
I don't know what it is, though.
I wonder if it is that kind of throne or if it's kind of like inspired by, like, I don't know. Even though I've never actually watched this old movie, I've seen enough little clips and things, like, where I always wonder if this is somehow due to the old Metropolis
movie. Interesting. Yeah, it looks like, I mean, it's almost symmetrical, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it like a city, it might, you know, buildings rising up and stuff like that. Huh. That might be it. Yeah, because I don't know about the other covers, but the other ones seemed like they had more background to it, whereas this is just, like, patterns.
Yeah, it's more stylized than the others, but, I mean, it's a great effect.
The ripped shirt and the tattoos.
Yeah. Now, I've often heard that the tattoos on Jack are actually patterned after Tony Harris's own tattoos.
Oh.
So tattoos are something that Tony Harris enjoys, is into, are on him. And so that's where kind of Jack's interests come in.
Okay. I've Googled Tony Harris tattoo.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. Wait, Tony Harris tattoo. No, he doesn't come out. Like, there's an... Because there's a tattoo artist called Tony Harris. So, when you Google Tony Harris tattoo, it comes out Tony Harris is, like...
I'm willing to go on record as based on Tony Harris. I'm feeling I can do that.
Okay. Okay. Oh, but Tony Harris himself tweeted, "Finally getting my second Starman tattoo in 15 years. Zodiac on top of my left hand. Have the winged panther on inside of left arm already."
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Huh?
Because that's the... We can even see the bit of the winged panther on on this cover, I think. Or is that something different?
Well, that tweet was written in 2011, and 15 years back from 2011, isn't it 1994? Let's check. 2011. 1996. So he had a Starman tattoo while he was probably doing Starman.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
So we move inside the issue. And I don't know, where should we start?
We should start about maybe the hero thing, how he does not like being called a hero.
You mean saying that damn H word?
Yes. Where is it? It's on this page, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that
on
first
this
page there.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So he's Jack is just about to save his father, go save his father, and battle Kyle. And Hope O'Dare, one of the O'Dare siblings, cop siblings, call him heroic for going to do that, for agreeing to do that. Because he's probably notorious for not being that person, and he gets really offended by Hope saying the word heroic or calling him a hero. But there was this line he said, "I'm merely icy cold. Scared is the truth of the matter." So he's scared. That's his motivation, right? So. And he doesn't want his dad to die.
No, and I love that. I love that he's the scared hero. He's still the reluctant hero here. That he hasn't had the... that from issue to issue, this has kind of remained a consistent thing. That it's not the, like, well, now I must go do my duty. And that we also have the kind of contrast that the O'Dares are ready to be heroes. But he's...
Right.
Yeah, he's... That Jack, the main hero of the book, is kind of like, whoa, I don't really want to do this, but I kind of have to. You know, he has to look himself in the mirror.
Let's see. The goatee part. I didn't really... get it, even though later we will see him in a flashback sporting a goatee. But what's the significance of him growing a goatee and shaving it off when, you know, it's time?
To me, I was just thinking that's the kind of thing of, like, you know, when it's not the goatee necessarily, it's that I'm saying, like, I have to look in the mirror when it's time to shave it off. Kind of a sideways way of referencing, you know, like, how can he look at himself? How can he live with himself if he doesn't try and save his dad?
Okay. You know,
he couldn't stand the sight of himself if he just were to hide.
Okay. I see. I see. And then straight from that, we jump into a flashback.
Yeah.
It's interesting how we know it's a flashback even before you read the words.
The coloring on it.
The coloring, yeah, the coloring.
Yeah. The pale washed out, like, the more orangey, sandy tone?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Almost sepia.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, so we see the brothers, I wouldn't say they're bonding, but there's an interaction, and this was the first time I noticed that David might have been a lot older than Jack.
Mm-mm. Yeah, because he's at least 3 years older, I'd say.
Mm.
3 to 5, maybe?
Mm. Yeah. So, we also see Jack's fascination with old things. But it's New York in the 40s, look! Yeah, so...
Jack's... Yeah, and it's, I love that it is both that, but it's also... It's New York in the 40s, here's our dad.
Mm-mm.
Like, so it is both the fascination of the old things, but also... He loves his dad.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. And I don't know, this is just me over-analyzing things, but David is in long sleeves while Jack is in short sleeves, and he spots a Band-Aid on his right forearm.
Mm.
You can kind of tell that... And David's room is like science, and he's like a maybe a little bit, like, you know, more bookish than his brother. If you think about who's going to be Starman, you know, who's the going out and getting injured and braving the elements. Because David is wearing long sleeves indoors.
Yeah.
And for all we know, you know, Jack, he, with his Band-Aid and everything, he might have been playing outside in short sleeves. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great, yeah. And I love on the bottom of that page when he does, when he has that, like, memory of he's going to be just like Dad. It's, you know, the kind of, now I'm forgetting my words. You know, it's the corresponding image of the kid with the Viewmaster, and then Jack kind of donning his goggles to go up and be the hero, to be his father.
Yep. Yeah.
And then on the next page, we kind of get a lot. We get lots of glasses in this issue. Have you noticed that?
Not until now.
Yeah, the importance of like the goggles and the viewfinder. And then we get Nash and Kyle talking, and Kyle gives Nash his glasses,
yeah.
I guess, to keep safe.
Yeah. Huh.
Like, I can't think of what the glasses would represent, but it just seems like a theme throughout it.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe they just found it really hard to draw eyes.
Oh, but we'll get to that because one of my favorite panels in this one has to do with eyes, but I don't want to give it away yet.
Okay.
But oh, and then the I like that this whole scene, the point of this scene between Kyle and his sister is to set up that she is gentle. You know, she doesn't, she loves her brother, she doesn't want to be the violent, she wants to be normal, she wants to just go watch a movie, but no action films, okay? No killing.
Yeah, and I see now why she spared Jack's life on the roof. She doesn't want to kill, they established that here. But it also shows the bond that she has with her brother.
Yes.
Just, you know, just sometimes I think that villains are, we easily forget that villains are capable of love as well.
Yeah. And again, we get the kind of the theme throughout this this arc is that, you know, family is the driving force between both of these groups, between the Knights and, I guess we can just call them the Mists. And did we freeze up here? Maybe we did.
We did?
Did we freeze up?
No, I didn't think so.
Okay, good. Yeah, and, you know, the importance of family, and just, I mean, even through just showing the hands in that panel where they're handing over the glasses to each other, just, I take one side of the glasses, you take the other side, we actually get that, like, little bit of familiar, of family caress, of like, you know, I love you, sis. I love you, bro.
Yeah. I think, and when, what's her name, Nash talks to Kyle, she doesn't stutter.
Yeah.
She's probably very comfortable with her family. You know, I've never heard her talk to her dad.
I think she did have the stutter, and it's definitely, like we said, there's that air of, like, poison creepiness.
The panel that she says, "Oh, Kyle, I love you so. You're the only one I can talk to without." Is that stuttering? Is she?
I think so.
Without, yeah, it's the word stuttering is not included in the panel. That's why I'm wondering. I don't know. I just suddenly feel really sad because, you know, you're the only one I can talk to without. Doing something like. And we all know how Kyle ended up. Should we go to that?
Well, do we want to...
We have to progress through that.
Yeah. Let's progress a little more. Like, because... I love this little fight scene. And, like, the whole time the fight's going on... You know, we got some great action panels and some great movement and just some excellent storytelling by Harris, but it's Robinson's words where it's the kind of unrelated but very related. Let me remember my dad. He's fighting for the life of his father, so it's that kind of like one step removed. You know, let me talk about how he's both a brilliant man who sees things that other people won't see, that's very obvious, but, you know, he's also says stuff that doesn't work at all. He'll say things that sound connected, that sound like they're right, but they're absolutely not.
I actually had to Google for the song that they talked about.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I thought about it, but then I was lazy.
I listened to it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And, he does sound like Nat King Cole, the guy, the Motown. I think it's Motown, not sure. Hughes Corporation. Yeah. Oh. So I did listen to it.
Oh, it sounded, is that the rock the boat, baby, rock the boat?
I think so, yeah. I've only listened to it once, you know, in my whole life, so... But it was one of those type of tunes. So, yeah. Interesting, very interesting. A lot of references I had to Google for, like Chris Isaak or something like that.
That made me giggle. It's like, all right, the 90s. Chris Isaak was one of the coolest people you can think of in the early 90s. Aww.
Yeah. So, it does give some perspective on the era as well. And one thing I have a question about is that first panel on the top left of, you know, the first page. What page is this? I'm not sure. But the man and the woman in the silhouette of the man and the woman. Is that Ted and his wife, you think?
I think, if I had to guess, the way it's, like, with the coat and with the next kind of in front of the moon, maybe, that it's Kyle flying away, I would think that would be Kyle and Max outside saying, like, a final goodbye.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. I was trying to figure out, because, you know, it came right after Jack was saying, oh, let's remember my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Oh, because the one on the right is... okay.
It's kind of strange, because we go from them inside their house and Jack kind of flying out the window to that one-page splash of Jack with the staff just flying into battle. And now I'm thinking about Dad, remembering. And then, yeah, like, right after it says remembering, we get that, but it's the silhouette of them outside, but...
Okay. Oh, so it we probably can guess that maybe Nash saw everything.
Maybe she did, yeah. Although they are in the cloud, so it would be hard to say, but, I mean, you could definitely...
Yeah. See the sparks and everything.
Oh, that'd be... Wouldn't that be just watching two sparks dashing at each other and trying to, like, figure out who's doing what?
Yeah. Okay, what else do you want to talk about?
I would like to... I want to save, like, the bit where he's remembering more about Dave and kind of talk about that kind of later on. So why don't we jump to the Shade showing up?
Okay. Okay.
Oh, I'm at the Shade.
Page. Yes. Oh, he doesn't reveal his intentions yet. Not in these pages.
Yeah. I love that bit, the me. The big bad villain. Big bad wolf.
Yep.
Oh, Shade, you're so evilish.
Evilish.
Yeah, he's a proper villain antagonist who's on the side of good. It's great.
I love it. He's, like, one of my favorite villains ever.
Yeah, and so what did... this is, you know, I've read this a couple of times. We've talked about that. So I kind of want to see what you think about his being on the side of good in this one. See what your take on it is.
I can't help but think of Kingpin from Daredevil.
Really?
Yeah, for some reason. They just want to be... Want the city, their own cities, to be good. But the way that they go about it... Kingpin is more, like, violent, not so much manipulative, but I feel that Shade is really smart. He's, like, this puppet master, and he preempts the moves of everyone, and he reads his friends and foes. I don't even know whether you can call him having friends, but he knows who to go to. I mean, why the Odairs in this at this point of time?
Yeah.
So he knows what's going on I like these type of characters because, you know, they're in the shadows. Literally, he is in the shadows. Well, there's a name for this where you teleport via shadows. Let me go. Did you know that there's a name for this? I think there's a name for this. Let me see.
Yeah, like there's even the power in, like, the old vampire role playing games. And if you asked me this, like, 5 years ago, I'd probably be like, oh, you mean blah, 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 blah. But now, you know, old age is robbing me of my geekdom.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, so, give me shadows.
While you're looking at that, I like that. Like you said, it's him going to the Odairs. It's him going to both... It kind of shows that both the Odairs are people he can trust to do the right thing, to take the stand, to go into danger, but also that they're people that he trusts to be competent in what needs to be done. It's both a trust in them and a trust in their abilities. I like that it not only establishes his character that he's reaching out, but it establishes them, even though, you know, they come in with what looks to be a whole SWAT team, but them as leaders, as not just generic cops.
That's smart writing right there. Okay. I found it. It's called Umbrageous Teleportation. Umbridge is darkness. That's one of the characters in Harry Potter. So, yeah, it's the power to teleport via the shadows and darkness. So.
Wish I had that.
Yeah, so that's what Shade has, and I suspect that's what he employs to become so seemingly omniscient about things. And I think it's a great, like, it's almost like he is the narrator in the shadows of this comic right now, you know.
Yeah.
So every time he appears, the story moves forward.
That's right.
And I really like that. That's why I think I like him so much, because he's the closest thing that we as readers come to. You know, like, because we, in a way, are omniscient as well. When we read the comic, we know what's going on in every character's thoughts. And whenever I see Shade, it just feels like I'm excited because, ooh, a secret's going to be revealed.
Yeah, it's really hard to say, and I'm not going to try and give away, I'm going to try not to give away any spoilers while saying this, but in this Starman run, it's really hard to say who the most breakout, standout character is when all is said and done. If it is Jack, the title character, or if it's Shade. I mean, the book is definitely more about Jack, but Shade is such a standout character that he does... He steals the scenes when he's there. He's great. And kind of just continuing, one of the things I love that as we go through this comic, where we have the different fights going on. We've got the kind of fights of memory of young Dave and Jack, where it's got that sepia tone. And then we have the fights. Like, we got two pages where, a couple of pages where, you know, the sepia-toned past, and then we've got, like, they're both in blues, but the at the mausoleum where the mist is holding Ted Knight has those, like, more blue-blue tones, and the fight between, on one page, the fight between Kyle and Jack, they're slightly greener, but they also have, like, the orange and the yellows going through it, and then as we change... the page where they break into where the mist is, again, like, the spectrum kind of changes so that the mist and even the shade have that sickly poison green to them, but the past still has that kind of sepia tone, and Jack and Kyle are in the blues, and just with very little, I mean, the only dialogue on those two pages, really, outside of just like, is Dave saying, "Say uncle," but going through them, there is never any doubt what is happening where or when. And it's such a skillful combination of both the art and the coloring that it's such great storytelling.
That's the beauty of comics, I guess. Interesting. I never really thought about that. But now, and can you imagine if these pages were just photocopied? You could never tell.
It would be harder to tell. And I mean, like you said, it's the beauty of comics, because this is done, and the way it's done, these pages go by so fast. Like, the tempo picks up and it moves, but I'm just trying to think of if this were done in a movie on a TV screen, you know, it would be so much harder to do, to do effectively, and it feels like it would have to slow everything down to make it sensible.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that comic books excel at, especially when they're handled with such great creators.
Yeah. Finesse.
And then, and we keep going back and forth between bits of
memories.
Yeah, of Dave being really a jerk to really standing up and being a good guy. It's almost like people aren't explicitly one thing or the other in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Huh. Do you have, this is what I wanted to ask you. Do you have any brothers or sisters? I can't remember.
No, I'm an only child.
Well, then, I don't. Do you have, like, close cousins or anything where you have this kind of bond with? Or?
No, actually, no.
Because as a guy who, I mean, I've got an older brother who might be around the same difference of age between me and, between me and my brother as Jack and his brother, and I can relate to a lot of this. We're not distant, but we're not exceptionally close either. And there's, like, looking back on memory, I can think of times where all I can think is like, wow, my brother is the greatest guy ever. Look at all these great things he's doing for me, tempered with, man, he is such a dick sometimes. Like, it's just, it's kind of both of those feelings wrapped up in one of, like, you know, he's not my best friend, but he's my brother and I love him, you know.
I see.
So it really hits home, this set of memories.
Wow. I've always been envious of people who have had older brothers, or very specifically older brothers. I guess this is like the idealism of a brother standing up for you.
but it also does come with that, like, and you see it here in this as well. Nobody hits my brother but me. It's like, yeah, brothers will stand up for you, but they also kind of know how to make things suck as well. So it is a little bit of both.
I see. I will never understand it. But yeah, that's cool. I don't know. I was really touched by these three panels. Like, Dave really showed some, I don't know, some humanity. But the one where he drank out of the cup.
Yeah. Cup is for drinking from. End of story.
Yeah. But it also shows how Jack kind of let the small things go. Because he's fighting and he's remembering all these things. Yeah. And these are the memories that choose to surface. You know, and he remembers Dave being a kind brother.
Yeah.
Amongst all the crap that Dave dealt him growing up. And it ending with him saying outright that he loves his brother. That was really nice.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how Kyle, maybe it was obvious, I don't know. Kyle knew that Dave and Jack weren't on good terms, like, not buddy-buddy.
I guess. I don't know. I wonder how he did know that.
I wonder if Dave, you know, being Starman, was a little bit of a jerk and was like, hey, my brother's useless and stuff like that.
Maybe. Or maybe it's just one of those things of, like, I mean, they are the Knight family. You know? Maybe they're kind of like minor celebrity, like, where if you kind of want to know, you know, if you want to go to the Opal City version of, what is it, TMZ? You can kind of find out, like, Jack and Dave. Brothers who hate, like, you know.
I see. Like the Kardashians. I don't know if they hate each other or not. I don't know anything
Dave
about
keep
Kardashians.
Dave keep on taking nude pictures of himself.
Yeah, that sounds like fan fiction.
Next week on...
Wait, can I say something about the weapon here? The cosmic rod?
Yes.
How is it so powerful? It's like a prototype or something, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing. Ted Nine must have been a really good scientist.
Oh, he was a super big scientist. It helps you, it lets you fly. I mean, come on.
Yeah, the rod that helps you fly. but yeah, I was very impressed by the firepower. I don't know, firepower? Power of this rod. Because it killed Kyle.
And this is the thing that I always like wonder if it's just me reading into the grossest way of reading it, or if this is in the comic. I guess with the blood coming out of his nose, like, I don't know. Because he stabbed the rod into Dave, into Kyle. That's how I'm reading it. Like, he just kind of embedded it into his chest and then gave the blast, so it kind of, like, fried him from the inside out. That's how I read it. Like, I don't know. Which is really kind of strong. I mean, we can see his bones frying on that first page.
Yeah,
when
he's
nothing but an ashen skeleton at the end.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah. I know. I didn't know. I didn't see it as he stabbed Kyle. I thought he just, you know, made contact.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, but... Huh. Yeah, but... He basically decimated Kyle. There's nothing left of... No. I know that... That's a bit harsh, isn't it? I mean... Even Dave didn't die like that.
Yeah, I mean, it is harsh. And, you know... I think... I don't know. The takeaway for me from that is really... It's... Jack does this, but he also... He makes that vow. That, like... He's not going to kill again. Like, this is it. Yeah, it's immediate. Like this is not something I need to do. Like this is this one time. Any other time would be too much. And then we get Nash, who is I don't know, almost, even though she's a criminal, she's almost as much of a victim of these events as anyone else.
Mm-mm.
You know.
Yeah. I especially like the way she was drawn on the page where Jack said, "I thought you stuttered," and she said, "That was somebody else." You know, she's hunched forward.
Yeah.
Even though she's been held into place by a police officer, and that stance, that position where she puts herself into is such a strong contrast with how she was struggling and yelling at Jack just seconds earlier. You know, it's very threatening and almost seductive.
Yeah, there is there's I mean, it's not aggrandized. What's the word I'm thinking of? It's not over the top, but there's still some cleavage there. You know, it's kind of It reminds me in a way of like a cat. You know, that like, hey, I'm beautiful, but I would like nothing more than to kill you right now.
And it's like an invitation to, you know, to a challenge. You know, wait and see what I become. And she puts on Kyle's glasses.
Yes. And then on that same page, this is the panel I was talking about. That what he does with the eyes of that last kind of facial picture of the mist, where he's like, you know, could you tell my son when he gets here? Where this whole comic, the mist has been
confused.
I mean, he's still creepy, but he's he looks so confused and so sad here, and he just, like, something about him broke. Like, there's been hints of it, like, in the bit of The Shade, where he doesn't quite have a grasp on the past. But here we get the thing that he's gone. He's having a dose of old age or Alzheimer's, that he's no longer connected. He doesn't seem like a threat here. He just seems like, in this one panel, they make him a sympathetic character. And I think that's, like, it's partly in the way it's done and a lot of in the eyes. It's just such a powerful panel to me, even though it's a very small portion of the page.
I see. Yeah. Never noticed that. Even there's a whole chunk of text from Ted, you know, saying how there's no victory tonight.
Yeah.
Not in any of this, because everyone's a victim. And Ted said he would feel better if the mist were, you know, proud or angry or defiant. He admits that he would feel some twisted satisfaction that it's not, you know, that's not right. Yeah, so. But, you know, what's that word? That German word that, you know.
Schadenfreude.
Yes.
Yeah.
Schadenfreude. But it doesn't apply here because they're just happy to be alive, I think.
And then we got the rest of the comic where it is that kind of agreement between Jack and Ted, like, I'll be Starman, I'm not gonna do patrols, I'm not gonna do that, but I'll be the hero for Opal City if you do the science. And I really like all that, and it's kind of the agreement. It kind of goes towards that eternal kind of, like, outside of comics thing of, like, you know, if people really had all these intelligence to, say, make a cosmic rod or make an Iron Man suit or make something like that, wouldn't there be more direct ways of, like, you know, if Batman, rather than investing all his money into making bat gadgets, what if he just invested all that same amount of cash into, you know, public schools and infrastructure? Like, what if he did that? Wouldn't that solve the crime problem in Gotham a bit faster? You know, then that would probably not sell as well as a comic.
That's true. And I think, I guess, for every Batman, there's some other rich guy there to donate to public schools in the superhero world. You know? So, I guess Starman pushing Ted Knight to do something productive is just one of the superheroes seeing things from in seeing things as a big picture.
And what I also really like about these last two pages, and is this is kind of for me the first time that I'm really noticing that in the art Jack and Ted very much look similar. Like, you can, like, the way their noses are done, the kind of the lines of their face, they very much look like father and son here.
For me, my favorite thing about these two pages, plus the last panel of the previous page, was the banter. You know, where did you get that tattoo? Dad. And, like, you know, this is where your mother and I conceived you. Oh, sorry, Dad. I didn't have to hear about that. And, you know, very family things.
Yes.
Yeah.
In that Zero issue, and even issue one, there was a bit of, like, there's too much strong feelings of distaste in here. And here in issue three, it's fun to read their dialogue together. There's joy in it, rather than they're like, I just walked in on an awkward family dinner.
Yeah, but of course there's still a little bit of awkwardness, because he, at the end, you know, Jack wants to say to Ted that we should be seeing more of each other, but he didn't say it. Instead, they talk about Starman again. And I actually can relate to this, because I have a very strange relationship with my mom. When I was a kid, you know, I wasn't really allowed to touch her.
Really?
Yeah, so we didn't, well, I don't think we hugged very much.
Mm.
So it was a very, like, it was awkward. We never said, like, it wasn't even an Asian thing or whatever, because my dad, he was very expressive. But my mom, it's very typical Asian dad, I guess. Yeah, so very hard even to say things like, do you want to hang out, you know? Or do you want to go watch a movie together? Or, you know, everything would come up as a request. Iron my clothes, please. Stuff like that. So, I don't know. It just felt like saying something, we should start seeing more of each other. This would be something I would never be able to say to my mom. I wouldn't be able to say something like, hey, you know, I'm in Japan now, we should Skype more. Yeah, even when we Skype, she doesn't really talk to me. She lets my dad talk to me. So, just very, even, you know, reading this comic, it makes me feel like, oh, this is such a nice relationship. Even though it's about Ted and Jack, you wouldn't think that they have a nice relationship. But for them to be able to banter, to joke, was something that, you know, I still don't have. My mom. Yeah.
And I mean, I think in a way, because, you know, I mean, I have a very much a banter filled relationship with my parents. So I think in a way, like, we're coming at the from different ends. And that's the fact that I think this comic, like, no matter what your kind of family situation is, I think it does help. It serves as, like, in a way, a reflection, a reminder on the importance of family. And and there's, like, kind of like you pointed out there, that he can't say it. Like, somehow the fact that he can't say it makes it feel very real. Like, it feels more real with him thinking it but not saying it, because it's too much. It's still kind of, they're not there yet, rather than if he'd been like, by the way, Dad, I love you so much, and you're the bestest. Like, if he had gone that far over just this short amount of time, it would have come off a little false to me.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Interesting.
Shall we move on to the epilogues?
Oh, did we skip something? We did, right?
Did
on
we?
On purpose.
I know we talked, like, we skipped a little bit about Jack and his brother, but I don't know. I'll let him the fight. We covered it, so I think I'm good.
Okay. Yes, let's move on to the. Oh, but before we do, do you notice that Jack is wearing a bowling T-shirt that has his name on it? So he's probably on the team.
Like, I didn't think of him on the team. I just kind of thought of him as being like. Actually, when I first read it, I wasn't paying much attention. Like, huh, it's funny that his shirt says Jock on it.
It's Jack, I think.
But now that you bring it up, like, I'm just getting these flashes of him going through and finding, this is a bowling shirt! It has my name on it! I've gotta buy it!
Or he could be on a bowling team with Shade and... I don't know. I'm curious to know who is on his bowling team.
Do you think it'd be like the Opal City Pin Stars or something like that? Or?
Yeah, that would be so cool. Again, fan fiction. Yep. Okay, epilogues.
Yeah. The blue-skinned cosmic geek.
Yeah, man. It just threw me off, this one. It's like... there are more star people?
Yeah. Now, when I first read this, I was we got the two epilogues here, the blue guy and the other guy, Will Payton.
Okay.
And because I've been reading comics, I never read any of the Will Payton comics, but I kind of knew, like, oh, right, there was, like, a Starman before this. Is that him? Is that someone completely different? I don't know. What was that guy's name? And since you couldn't just Wikipedia Starman at that point, like, I didn't know who Will Payton was, and I think someone might have even told me, like, oh, yeah, he was the Starman before this Starman, but he didn't have anything to do with the original Starman, but he's still Starman. And I had no idea at all who the blue guy is. Like, I don't think the blue guy was really a remembered character.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I'm really gonna say about them, because I don't want to give anything away.
Okay.
But that was me when I read it, so I'll tell you the same thing someone told me of, like, oh yeah, that Will Payton guy. He was a Starman before Starman, but not related to the first Starman. Starman.
I see.
Starman.
So it's Starman.
Starman.
Blue Starman.
Starman.
Was okay. Starman. Starman. Is the first Starman.
Starman.
And
I'm having fun.
Maybe he was from a star.
Yeah.
Far off land. He had a love. He was happy. And once he was Starman.
Oh, I'm getting chills. Like really.
Yeah, I'm interested to find out about him. But I love the colors in these two pages very much. You know, circus and everything. But once you flip, you see, like, these, like, science, space, alien type of colors.
Yeah.
Epilogue 2.
And I love the fact that the layouts for both epilogues are the exact same.
Mm-hmm.
You got the six panel grid, full page. Six-panel grid, full page. And just good hand clap, good comic making.
Yeah, agree. If you notice the lower three panels, if you just kind of shift back and forth between, you know, the circus, the freaks, and the chimp, and the cosmic geek, it looks a lot like the next three panels at the same position.
Yeah.
On the next page, like the peaks
with the spire and the
spires. Yes,
that's really nice. Good comic making.
Yes.
Well, I think that's all I got to say about Starman issue 3.
Because
I think this is the strongest issue so far.
Me too.
Well then, until next time.
Until next time. I hope I find out more about these two star people.
Oh. Oh, you will. You will.
Okay. Yes.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.